all 30 or 40 minutes of music for piano two hands and piano four hands. Piano four hands is music that came to be primarily in the 18th and 19th century when composers realized that the piano had the capability to become sort of like an orchestra, and that rather than have two hands on it, let's put four, and there are even some pieces with six or eight, but it becomes a little busy in that category. So music for four hands, though, is very common, and what we began with was a movement from one of the sonatas by Mozart. He wrote a great number of pieces for piano four hands, some that were for him and his sister, that they took on tour when they were old, experienced veterans, ages 8 and 10, and did a lot of traveling about. I'm going to play a group of several numbers myself now. The first is an Allegro by George Frideric Handel. I often like to play something by Handel because people somehow think that he spent his whole life composing Messiah, which actually took 3 weeks. And considering that he lived to be a composer in his 70s, he did a little bit more than just write Messiah. And this is one of the keyboard works, an Allegro in C major. For an instrument like this, because in the time of Handel, this instrument did not exist. What he would have written for would have been the harpsichord. And of course, the biggest difference between a harpsichord and a piano is simply that on a harpsichord, all of the sound is produced by a little pick, or what we call plectra, which when you push the key down, it picks at the string. The difference is that when the piano was developed, it has, of course, as you've seen when you've looked inside a piano, a hammer for each of the strings, and it hits against it. Because of that major innovation, the piano was able to do something that never had happened before, and that was that it could play different dynamics. On the old harpsichord, you could change the dynamic only by adding stops. But on the piano, your touch could change it. And that is why the instrument was first called, and for many years was known as pianoforte. Piano meaning Italian for soft, and forte meaning loud. So it was known as the soft loud. And gradually, people just stopped calling it that and just called it the piano, which is, of course, not actually true, because it does more than play soft. But anyway, he did not write it for that. One, our next composer did, and it's probably a composer making a debut at Holden Village. For all kinds of reasons that are very obvious to most of us who've done any study of history, women in the 19th century had a real tough time of it when it came to composing music. It simply was not accepted. It was barely accepted for a man to go into the career of composition, let alone a woman to do it. But I want to play two pieces for you tonight by the older sister of Felix Mendelssohn, his sister Fanny, who was 2 years older than Felix, and a lot of the music that Felix wrote was actually Fanny's music. But she knew that it would never come out if it was under her name, so she just put it under Felix's name. She was married to a very famous painter named Hensel, and so her name is actually Fanny Hensel. And she and Felix were very good friends. They both admired each other's compositions, and Felix wrote a whole set of pieces that we call the Songs Without Words. They were just little sort of tone poems in which you caught a mood without actually having words to express it. And what I'm going to play are two of the Songs Without Words that Fanny wrote. These are two Songs Without Words by Fanny Hensel. Thank you. masks, and it's common, especially when there are a lot of children around. Now, when did you start playing the piano? Well, I started lessons when I was 4, and when did you start?
5.
You were, Chris was 5. Yeah, he was late. Right. And I never taught my son. There was not that kind of patience. Right. Definitely could not do that. But I think we a couple of years ago said, you know, we started to look together and think that perhaps we once in a while could get together and play some piano four hands. Chris is 19. He will be a senior at Carleton College this year and is majoring there in double major in music and in Latin and Greek. And we are going to hope to do something during the coming year again back in Minneapolis. The next piece is a bizarre one for four hands. It's a piece that Hindemith, there is a fugue of Bach that begins. Little theme, and during the 1920s, when ragtime was so popular, Hindemith said, you know, if Bach was alive, he'd have loved ragtime. And Hindemith was not one of those composers that one thinks of as a ragtime composer at all, but nonetheless, he wrote a piece called Ragtime for piano four hands, and he based it on that little theme of Bach that I just heard. Not all the time will you hear that theme. But it does come in and out, and so we're going to play for you Paul Hindemith's Ragtime, 1921. Thank you.
I'm going to start out with a short, not so short, prelude by Johann Sebastian Bach from the set of 48 preludes and fugues that he wrote called the Well-Tempered Clavier. This was at a point when the piano and the tuning, well, no, they didn't have pianos back then, just like Handel, they had harpsichords, but the tuning had been changed so that you could actually play in all the different keys and it would sound good. Before this time, you could play in C major, and it might sound good, but if you played in D flat, for example, it would sound really bad. And of course, it's, I mean, I can't tell how it is on the piano, but anyway, so he wrote a set of, well, studies, you might call them, for the newly tuned piano, showing that you could actually use all 24 different keys. So this is the prelude from the second book of the Well-Tempered Clavier in C major. I'm not sure if the next composer is making a debut here or not. Darius Milhaud was an early 20th century French composer, and he spent World War I. France was not such a great place to be at the time, so he went to Brazil and gathered in a lot of the Brazilian spirit and wrote a set of 12 dances that he called Souvenirs of Brazil, and they've got a lot of the Brazilian flavor in them, but then they also have a lot of Mio's own French personality, and one of the things that Mio likes to do is have the two hands in different keys. So if you listen to one or the other, it sounds all right, but you put them together and it sounds a little different. So it might sound like some wrong notes that I play and sound very happy about, but I assure you they're all right. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not doing all 12, in case you were worried. I'm only doing the first four. He named them after different places that he liked to frequent in Brazil. So there are little tone poems almost. Thank you.
developments, of course, that happened with the piano is not so much with the piano, but it happened with music in general, which for which pieces like the one you've just heard felt freer to happen. And that was that back in the 1920s, composers began to think about, you know, how do you stretch your ears as far as music? And up to that time, people said that if this, you had to have three notes to make a chord. And so chords were things like this. Those were called nice chords, you know. That was a nice chord to have. And then there were composers that came along and said, is it true that three notes make a chord? Yes, that's right, said the academicians. Those are nice chords. And they said, well, no, what about these three notes? You know, they said, well, no. And they had no answer for that. And they said, well, actually, if those three notes are a chord, so are these three. So are the... And so pretty soon people started to experiment and say, well, you know, now do we have to have everything in the same key at the same time? And so a piece like the one that Christopher just played puts one hand in one key and another hand in another, and gives you all those kinds of flavors. One of the other developments that happened, and I'm not going to play a whole piece with it tonight, but just to show you, especially the young people might be interested, that they started to develop the whole idea that you could play on this side of the keyboard. In other words, you didn't have to play down here, you could play on the strings. And the way you could do that was very simple. You only had to remember that when you play the piano, right now those hammers are all lying flat against the strings. And as long as they are there, no sound will come out. Now, when I push a note, the hammer has struck that note and is not touching the note, which is why you can hear it still playing. Now, the only other way to do that would be to press it down softly, like I had just done, but you didn't hear it being pressed. And then I could look inside, make sure I knew where it was, and go, and, you know, strike it with my fingernail. And you could get the same effect. Then, the other way you can do that is that, of course, there are the three pedals. And the one we are most often concerned with is the pedal on the right side, the damper pedal. When that pedal goes down, all it does is lifts every hammer off the strings. So that now that it's down, all of these are free to sound. As soon as I play something, they will sound as long as there is sound to be heard or my foot goes up. Now, if I want to, since I now have pushed my foot down, I also have the ability, since now the hammers are up, to just do sort of a wisp of sound inside, you know. You know, you can do that kind of thing inside there. You could make up a whole melody. I mean, anything you want, you know, could go inside there. They began to figure out harmonics, and that would be that you'd realize that if you pushed the string down, and if you were, let's say you were pushing down the string, you could start, and especially if you took the long strings, I'm just pushing on the one string, but moving it up and down. It does help if it's clean inside here, by the way, otherwise. And if you want to try this at home on your piano, if your piano hasn't been tuned for a long time, don't do it. Only because you start pushing on those strings and they haven't been used to being tuned and they sort of go berserk. But anyway, they began to do all of this kind of experimenting. And several of the composers, Henry Cowell was one, who would do a whole program where he would be standing over there and someone else would be seated here. And he'd be doing all this kind of inventing things of what went on. But all of those ideas helped to make the piano a more unique kind of instrument and not just confined to one narrow idea. We want to play for you one other piece tonight. I do want to mention, before we do so, there are two other music events for those of you that are going to be here this week. Thursday night, Mark and Susan Lundholm are going to do a program of songs that we're sort of calling an evening in old Vienna that I think you might enjoy. And then Saturday night, which is sometimes a humorous night, for lack of another title, we're calling it The Musical Path Less Trodden, starring Philip Brunel and Wes Preed. I think it needs no other introduction than that. So this evening, we're going to close our little program with a piece by Peter Schickele. Many of you know Peter Schickele because he, of course, has brought to us the works of P.D.Q. Bach, the last and least of all the children of Bach. And this is an overture that Peter Schickele wrote called the Overture to the Opera, The Civilian Barber. Near the end, there's a slight reminder of the Beethoven Fifth that is purely intentional.